It's a Football Wednesday. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura with you on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Coming up a little later, at the bottom of this hour, we're going to have a conversation with Gerard Cherry, his regular visit to this show. But right now, we are very pleased to have with us from the Cleveland, from Cleveland.com and from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, does an excellent job of covering the Browns, Mary Kay Cabot. Mary Kay, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Oh, hold on a second. Now let's technically get this set. Now I think you can we could be heard.
I am doing great. How are you guys doing?
Just want to make sure everybody knows how great you're doing. Well, okay, this team's not doing great after that opener, and it gets tougher now to fathom the chance of trying to get a first win in Baltimore, Mary Kay, just hard to do.
Absolutely. I mean, geez, you know, these Baltimore Ravens are really going to be ready for the Cleveland Browns. Their pride is on the line. They won the Super Bowl last year, and they got beat up by Denver. That defense, we all know how good the Ravens defense is to begin with, but they are going to be snorting mad this game. And, you know, I almost in some ways pity some of the guys the Browns are going to have to go against. And the right side of that offensive line has got to get better this game.
It certainly does, and we've been talking about that on this show, that the struggles of Mitchell Schwartz, particularly in pass protection, cost the Browns, I think, a couple of big plays as the game went on, and certainly he was beaten for, you know, three sacks by Cameron Wake and many quarterback hurries and pressures, etc. When you talk about this Baltimore Ravens team, it's not going to get much easier from a protection standpoint in the sense they have Elvis Dumervil, they have got Terrell Suggs, they added Chris Canty, but I do think they have some guys that you can run the football on, and when you think about Dumervil, more of a pass rusher than a run stopper, Canty, the same thing. How important is it for, in your mind, for the Browns to get this ground game going with Trent Richardson?
You know, it's important to a degree, but however they move the football is what they're going to need to do, right? I mean, if they're bottling up Trent, you know, you can't just, you know, fold up the tent and say, oh, hey, you know, he can't run the ball. I mean, look what happened in the game on Sunday. The Miami Dolphins were not able to run the football either. Right?
They were not.
Yeah.
They couldn't run the football, but it did not stop them.
20 yards on 23 carries.
It did not stop them from winning the game. They found a way to ding the Browns through the air, and that's exactly what the Browns are going to have to do if Trent can't get going.
And I think, Mary Kay, you've hit on something really important here, that the first thing this Browns team tries to do philosophically as a base is find those chunk plays. Rob Chudzinski, North Turner go into every game thinking that. It isn't that they go into games thinking we're not going to run, but that's the priority, and the idea is that's supposed to help open up things in the run when you're connecting on those plays. The big problem against Miami is that they didn't connect enough. They left, again, too many of those on the field.
Right, and a lot of that starts with the pressure that they got and the penalties that they got, and they found themselves in third and long plenty of times. Once you get yourself into those kinds of downs and distances, you're not going to be able to try to run Trent Richardson. And I don't have as big of a problem as a lot of people seem to have with the fact that they didn't run Trent enough in the second half, because if it's not working, you cannot keep beating your head against the wall.
You're gonna devour clock, and you're gonna put yourself in a worse position if you keep slamming your head against that proverbial wall while trailing by as much as they were trailing.
Right, and not only that, I think, you know, and maybe this had nothing to do with it, but you have to start to wonder if Trent is getting slammed behind the line of scrimmage and you're having problems with your run blocking, you're putting him in harm's way. So I think, you know, perhaps they may have also realized that, you know, that was a factor. So this game, they have to give Mitchell Schwartz more help in the form of chipping, and they have to do it, I think, with a bigger tight end. And we don't know what they're going to do yet. We can't watch all of practice, but you would have to think that they're going to try to put a Kevon Milton over there. He weighs 293 pounds, and these guys are young rookies, but they need blocking help.
They certainly do. What are some of the matchups as you look at this game, especially, let's say, from the Browns' offensive perspective against the defense of the Baltimore Ravens, particularly in the secondary? Who are the people you think that have to step up? Because this was a Ravens secondary that's undergone a lot of turnover, a lot of transition. Kerry Williams is gone. Ed Reed is gone. New faces in a lot of new places. Some of them not as good in coverage, especially James Ahidobe. I think that's somebody the Browns can exploit. But what are you looking for in this passing game to really get some of those chunk plays going? Who needs to step up?
Well, you know, I think that that Travis Benjamin for sure is a place where the Browns can get behind some of these guys in the secondary. That's a place where they're going to have to hit some big plays on this secondary. He can outrun anybody in their secondary. And if he can get into a little bit of a foot race and hit some of those big plays, that's what he's going to have to do. So I would look to him. And then, you know what? Beat them at their own game that they would have done if they had Dennis Pitta. Get Jordan Cameron going.
Agreed.
Over that middle. I think you can exploit some of the linebackers. I mean, defensive line, we know, very formidable. But I think you can find some places to find some mismatches with Jordan Cameron and a few of the linebackers.
Mary Kay Cabot from Cleveland.com and from the Cleveland Plain Dealer is joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Mary Kay, with Brandon Whedon, and he took a lot of grief, as one would expect for a quarterback who threw three interceptions, however many of those were truly his fault or not, but just some other misplays in general. But you don't get the feeling that he, as he faces the chance of trying to rebound in this game, that he is lacking some level of confidence, or that he's so crushed by what happened in the opener that he's not going to be able to rebound. I mean, just trying to read his demeanor, and we can overdo that. But I'm liking the fact that he's kind of carrying himself as a guy who, I'm not saying he's not saying that was no big deal, but I think he understands what needs to be done this time around.
Well, the thing that jumps out to me about Brandon Whedon, what did we hear about him all the time at Oklahoma State? That he was never hit, that he would get done with the game and his jersey was completely clean, and that he never really faced the pressure. So you wondered, how would he handle a game where he just gets absolutely beat up? And he got so beat up this game. Every time we looked up, he was on his back. Mm-hmm. And we saw him after the game. We saw the welts on his body. We saw, you know, just he looked beat up. And so you almost have to wonder, after the game or when you see him on Wednesday, you know, does he seem rattled? Does he seem like he's moving slowly? I saw none of that. So I think from a toughness standpoint, he proved a lot. And that will go a long way with his teammates, because they gain a lot of respect when you see a guy take hits like that. So, you know, I think from that standpoint, it's a good thing for him. But, you know, he needs to pick it up. Everyone needs to play 10% better. If everyone can give 10% more, because when I look at these quarterbacks throughout the years that have played here, Colt McCoy, you know, all the way back to Tim Couch, mm-hmm. Charlie Fry, you name it. I don't care who it is, who you even bring in here, Jeff Garcia. You know, it doesn't matter who is here. You have to have guys out there making plays for you. Why did Derek Anderson go to the Pro Bowl, and why did they go 10-6? One of the reasons was because Braylon Edwards caught 16 touchdown passes for him that year. I mean, look at
Kellen Winslow.
Right. Look at Joe Flacco without even, you know, an Anquan Boldin or a Dennis Pitta. You find out in a hurry that, you know, maybe it's a little bit more than just the quarterback.
Yeah, you look at what Anquan Boldin does going in his first game to the San Francisco 49ers, over 200 yards receiving to lead the National Football League. You talked about the toughness that was shown by Brandon Whedon and how that's going to impact his teammates. How about the fact they're going to get Barkevious Mingo back in this game? What are your expectations for the rookie first rounder in his NFL debut against the Ravens?
Well, he looks really fast out there. I was just out there watching him in practice, just kind of exploding through the bags, and he looks really fast and ready to go. And now he's got a little something to prove because he missed his first game. So I know he wants to come out big, but I think they will probably limit his reps. You know, I think they want to kind of get him in there some and see how he does as he goes throughout the week. I don't expect that he's going to get 43 snaps this game. I would think, you know, that maybe you'd start him out with, you know, somewhere between 16 and 20 snaps, see how he handles that. I mean, you have to see how he responds to this.
Right.
But, you know, I think that if watching him in practice is any indication, you know, I can't remember the last time I saw someone that this gifted athletically.
And sticking with the defensive theme, what we heard about the secondary's issues were that there was a lack of communication, that there were communication breakdowns that led to assignment breakdowns. And when you hear terms like that, I think the good news is they sound solvable, unless these are communication issues that, you know, that are going to exist the entire season. And I don't know that usually is the case, that if you identify what you were doing wrong or what you didn't pick up in a certain coverage, and that you would invariably be back to that coverage in another game, that you would know what you were supposed to do, that response could take place, that a Tashawn Gibson, for instance, shouldn't be miles away from the next pass catcher around him.
Well, you know, I think when you look at this football team, it was the first game for everyone. And that was the major difference between, you know, the Miami Dolphins and Ryan Tannehill's, you know, the second opener of his career. He had the same system, the same coaching staff. When you look at the Browns, offensively and defensively, it was the first game for all the players working together, but for the coaches looking out there for the first time to see what is Chris Owens, how is Chris Owens going to respond in this right. situation? What is Buster going to do over here? Which one of them is better inside in the nickel? You know, it was the first time for everyone to see how guys respond when there's live tackling. Who's going to make the tackle? Who's going to miss it? So, you know, I think that they should make a significant improvement from a communication standpoint and from a working together standpoint over the next 3 weeks.
And you certainly hope they do, because I think Joe Hayden looks to me to be back to his pre-2012 form. And I thought he had a very good game against Mike Wallace. He has owned Mike Wallace. I want to see him continue that against Torrey Smith this week. But that second cornerback spot is going to continue to be something that is going to be attacked by opposing defenses game after game after game after game. And you're just kind of waiting for Buster or Chris Owens to step up. The one thing, and Vicky, I'd like you both to chime in on this, that surprised me a little bit is, in the preseason, pretty much for the entirety of the preseason, when they went to the nickel, Buster Screen moved inside. And in week number one, Chris Owens played more snaps in the slot than Buster Screen. And I was a little bit surprised by that. And Chris Owens, quite frankly, we had Buster Screen in the preseason giving up about 5 yards a target in there. And then Owens was in there, 6 targets, 5 catches, 50 yards. He got beat pretty good, I'd say.
I think the basic thinking was, and I asked this question as a follow-up during the Monday, what I got was it was the idea that Buster Screen being the faster of the two and the healthier of the two on Hartline. And the theory was that he could – they know Hartline's double moves, triple – I think he put a quadruple move on that touchdown, but and that schooled Buster. But in general, the thinking was athletically Buster would keep up with him better.
Yeah, I think so. That was part of it. And then I think another part of it is the fact that Chris Owens is coming back from a strained foot arch.
Right.
And he has missed a ton of practice. And, you know, I just don't think he is 100% yet. And for the Browns' sake, I'm sure they're hoping that he will get better and that does have something to do with it, because he really did struggle in this game.
Are you surprised that Leon McFadden, given that he did struggle, we didn't see Leon McFadden in week number one? And what does that say about where he's at this point?
You know, I don't think they want to destroy his confidence yet. I think he's one that, you know, he also missed a significant amount of time with the groin injury. And, you know, this is a coaching staff that they're a little bit more old school. Coming from more like the Dick LeBeau philosophy, I don't think some of these more old school guys love to throw rookies into the fire right away. Mm-hmm. I think they recognize that a guy that has been there before and seen some reps in his day is going to fare better than a rookie that, as we saw in the preseason, struggled in a couple of games.
Mary Kay Cabot with us from Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. It's going to be interesting to see how Paul Kruger treats this game, right? Going up against his former team, and the constant thing this guy heard from the moment he became a free agent and the foregone conclusion that he would be an ex-Raven is, how's he going to function without Terrell Suggs? How's he going to function out of the shadow of Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and all the guys that basically he was just a component with rather than a main piece? He's a main piece here, and I think he goes into this game with that, whether he'll say it or not, and I think he'll say some of it in hearing him and seeing that gleam in his eye, I just think that's going to be something to watch Sunday.
Oh, it's definitely going to be something to watch. You know, he came here right off the bat and said, you know, he wants to stand out in his own right. He doesn't want people questioning whether or not he was going to be successful without Terrell Suggs on the same field as him. You know, he wants to prove that they made the wrong move by not doing whatever it took to keep him. And I think this is going to be a huge game for him. And I think from their standpoint, I think that they are going to be out to do everything that they possibly can to prove that they didn't need Paul Kruger.
Right.
So from both sides, I think it's a huge game.
It is a huge game. And I remember hearing the quote that Kruger gave after the Super Bowl saying that he was pissed off even though they won the Super Bowl because he played 19 snaps and he felt disrespected. I mean, this is an opportunity for him to go out there and disrespect them right back to the benefit of the Cleveland Browns.
It is, you know, but when we're talking about those kind of emotional intangibles that are going to be there for this game, you know, you just have to look at this game. And if they were coming off a big victory over the Broncos and then they were facing the Browns, I mean, you might almost think that, you know, they would
an
be
overlook.
Thinking they were all that, coming off their Super Bowl victory, coming out against the Broncos.
Not going to happen.
And, you know, instead, they're going to be very, very ornery. They've got a lot of pride right now that they need to come back from that game and show that they are the defending Super Bowl champions. And, I was watching that first game thinking, I pity the next team that's playing these guys. It just so happened to be the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. And I think the last piece to this is, you know, how we see the Browns respond from that same standpoint. How upset are they? How ticked off are they? And really, that's what we don't, you know, you don't get a sense truly of that on a Wednesday. I don't think there's a ton of guys on this team that wear their emotions on their sleeves, just maybe how they're built or how they're wired, hardwired. What do you see in the locker room? Same type of thing? Or are you getting a different vibe?
You know what? I am getting the vibe that these guys do have something to prove. I think this is a whole football team full of guys that they were ready to come out here and have a good season. They still seem to feel that way. I'm not sensing that anyone has been shaken in their confidence or anything like that. I know when we talk to Paul Kruger tomorrow and when we talk to T. Rich tomorrow, they're going to be ready to run through a wall. So I think it'll be a very high-intensity game on Sunday.
Mary Kay, thank you so much for the breakdown, and we'll do this again.
Sounds good. Thanks
a lot.
Thanks,
Mary Kay.
She is Mary Kay Cabot. Check out her great work at Cleveland.com, and, of course, she covers the Browns for The Plain Dealer. We've got much more coming up at the bottom of this hour. Gerard Cherry will join us. We'll take more of your calls at 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. It is Cleveland Browns Daily. You are listening to ESPN 850 WKNR.